जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मेतयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः. So we have been discussing the sixth chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad. What was the point we discussed today morning? This sixth chapter can be divided into three parts. The first part makes us understand that if there is an effect, there must be a cause. The effect can be many, effects can be many, but the cause is one. The effect is visible, but the cause is invisible. Is it ever possible that all that we call the world has come out of one cause? Our normal understanding is every object has its own cause. But if we pursue enough, then we find every object can be dissolved into one cause. Let us take one example. The first division that we make is that I am a human being. This is the very first thing that comes to our mind. And everything else is separate from me. Division and then separation. I am a man or I am a woman. I am a child, I am an old person, etc. But if someone goes a little deeper and says, all the men, women can be resolved into one category with one name. What is that?
Humanity.
It doesn't matter east, west, south, north, anywhere. Still, there is the division. This is humanity, human being, and these are animals, these are trees. So, if we can go one step further, what is the step further?
Living
and non-living. So, all living beings fall into one category, and all non-living beings fall into another category. Go one step further. What is that step?
Anything possible.
Existence. See, you cannot experience something unless it is existing. So you go and say, everything that is existing is all one. So come to that point. Science has come to that. Existence. What is the name science gives to this existence?
Energy.
No. Matter. Matter. Because matter is something that is visible, experienceable, etc. Then go a little bit further, subtler than that. That is called energy. So Vedanta accepts this proposition. Very good. Only one problem is there. Where do you fit in the consciousness? So that is where Vedanta comes to our aid. And we say that if something is existing, how do we know that it is existing? So before one can recognize, here is a harmonium. How do I know it's a harmonium? Who is first, harmonium or me?
Me.
What is that me?
My consciousness.
Consciousness, awareness, consciousness. So the existence is meaningless unless there is consciousness. So science has raised certain very interesting questions. Does an object exist if there is no one to cognize it?
If nobody recognizes it, then it might not as well as be existing.
Supposing there is something in a deep forest. No, not deep forest, suppose beneath the carpet there is something is there. But you are not aware of it.
I'm not aware of it. So
but
for
does the object exist or doesn't exist?
For me, it doesn't.
It exists.
For me, it doesn't.
The substance exists.
Existence is throughout, so it should exist.
So, the argument goes both ways. You see, it may be there. If I do not know, for all purposes, it may be non-existent.
Yes.
This is one side of the argument. But if there is an object, there must be something which recognizes it. Otherwise, how does one say this is an object? Do you get the point? Even to say this is an object, there must be something which recognizes it, this is existing. That is why Vedanta solves this problem in a unique way. What is that? What, wherever there is Sat, there is Chit. Because Sat and Chit cannot be separated. These are not three separate qualities. These are three ways of looking at the same existent something. Where there is Sat, there would be Chit also. Then, there are two variations. Sat, Chit and Ananda. Sat, Satyam, you know, what is called? Jnanam, Anantam. Anantam. Anantam means infinity. Now, what is the idea of infinity? What is the idea of infinity? You know, our normal mind, as soon as we hear infinity, comes its huge, countless, big. This is one. But we are talking about from the objective point of view, manifesting point of view. The cosmos is very huge. Very huge is not infinity. Impossibility of infinity. Here is clay. How many objects can come out of the clay?
Infinite.
Your consciousness is the limit. Consciousness is unlimited. Therefore, it is unlimited. This is how, where there is we are talking about not manifestation of existence. We are talking about pure existence. Pure existence has no nama-rupa, you have to understand. No gunas.
Yes.
That is why it is called existence. But all the gunas are capable of being manifested in that. All the names and forms. You see, clay, for example, you know. Whether you make small pot, big pot, round pot, square pot, how many, anything is possible. Is it not?
It is not infinite, Swamiji, it is uncountable.
That is, you see, infinity means infinite possibilities are there. We are not talking a limited quantity of clay. We are talking infinite. Existence by definition is infinite. If existence is infinite, consciousness also is
infinite.
If consciousness is infinite, then any manifestation would also be, must be infinite.
Right.
That is why, Purnam Adaha, Purnam Idam. Purnat Purnam Udachyate. Purnasya Purnam Adaya, Purnam Eva Avasishyate. So, this is the abstract idea, because existence is an abstract idea. You cannot imagine, because we are having nama-rupa. That's why your idea about existence is also one form of nama-rupa. So, but how to know? By upasana. That's why upasana is very necessary. Okay? You have this point. What is the second point we said is ananta. Why ananta?
Beyond time.
Because when there is no mind, what is it that limits everything?
The mind.
It is the mind. When the mind itself is not there, then it is only Purna, Ananta. Now the last word confuses many of us Vedantis. God's name from devotee's point of view is Ananda. So where is the Ananda here? Here it says Ananta. Here it says ananda. Sat chit ananda. Satyam jnanam anantam. How do you equate sat? Satyam.
Chit.
Chit jnanam. Anandam anantam. How do you understand it? How do we understand it? Very easy. It is boundless. Why is it boundless? From the viewpoint of manifestation, it is not boundless because it's limited. Manifestation is another name for limitation. But from the viewpoint of pure existence, the anandam is not understandable, not penetrable. What is your problem?
Because it is boundless, then there is no, even to experience anandam, something should exist.
We are talking about existence.
Yes.
And you are asking something must exist. We are only talking all the time about existence. This way, that concept of division, this is sat, this is chit, this is ananda or ananta, that itself is incomprehensible by us, because our normal understanding is, here is an object, here are the qualities. Simple experiment. Take any object, get rid of the qualities. Let me see what is your idea of that substance.
It loses its...
That's the existence, pure existence.
Can you experience pure existence?
No.
Because when you remove the namarupa, what is the difference between you and the object?
That's right.
The object becomes an object only when it is endowed with namarupa.
Yeah. So it's the deep sleep that is the
state. It is not ananta. Neither it is what we call ananda. That is why it is called kosha. Kosha means prachurya, ananda prachurya, plenty of ananda. Because there is no duality there.
Right.
There is no enemy, there is no friend. It has its own beautiful experience. But it is an avastha. That is why it comes to an end. That is, whatever comes to an end is not ananda. It is ananda maya kosha. It is an avastha. Telugula avastha padutu antam ide. Yeah. Okay. Now coming to the point, ananda nananta. So there is one way of explanation. Every object in this world is capable of giving ananda at some point from one angle. Every object. From the same object also produces its opposite from another point of view. That's understandable? So we have to move from the known, from the concrete to the abstract. So simply take, you know, poison. Poison is not only what we call a negative concept, you know, it takes away life. But the same poison in small quantities can be a life-saver. In fact, most of the things, they're, even rasagulla, is it poison or is it nectar? So anything can be poison, anything can be nectar. So that means everything has the possibility of ananda. Every single object has the possibility of ananda in the right circumstances or right view. That means when the whole, when the part is merged in the whole, if this is the nature of an object, that ananda is inherent in it potentially.
Yes.
Therefore, when you think of pure existence, what do you think it is? Infinite happiness. Infinity brings infinite happiness.
Yes.
Yeah. Only limited existence or manifestation of existence has both sides of the coin, depending upon sometimes it can we can experience happiness, sometimes we can experience unhappiness. But we also discussed darkness, unhappiness, suffering is Maya. Existence is not Maya. Absence of existence is Maya. That means to say, here is a person. We experience that person. We are happy. But when he dies, that means when the body goes, then what happens? It produces. What does it produce? This is what called death. So death is not generally desirable. But the point is, this death is not a reality. Life is a reality. Death is not a reality. Because life is what is called existence. Death is called not absence of existence, absence of the experience of existence. Simply you are not able to see it. But you burn a piece of paper. What happens to that? You are not seeing the paper. But you are not destroying the paper. The paper is now in another format. So that's why death has no value. Death is another form of existence. But you see, because death is not a problem. Death can be a joyous affair. When you are suffering, death can be joyous. When a rich uncle dies, is it a joyous affair? When, you know, you see, we all experience it. ISIS leader is killed by drones. Unconscious, how many of you did not feel happiness by reading that news? Do you see the point? Yeah. He doesn't know you, you don't know him. But somehow brain is washed that what we did is an excellent work and one big poppy has been removed from the earth. But we are not understanding the problem. Problem is they are like rakta bijas. If one is removed, 100 will spring from that. Okay, what is the point here? What is the point? So death is only absence of active experiencing life. Understand? What is suffering? What is pain? Pain is a pause between two. So when we say dvandva, it's a very important concept, abstract concept. Ananda is part of existence. But dukkha is not part of experience. It is invisible ananda. Yeah.
How is pain? Dukkha is ananda.
What?
How is pain unexplainable ananda?
You see, because we do not see the entire picture. We only see partial picture. So let us take one or two examples. Here is you are very tired. Then you go to sleep. And then you get plenty of relaxation, refresh, is it? That tiredness, is it positive or negative? Is it invisible happiness or what? Because refreshed experience is equivalent to the amount of tiredness you have. The suffering of hunger will bring more happiness or equal happiness when you eat food. In that sense, there is no dukkha. It is a kind of preparation for the next stage of experience.
So we have to take both of them together. So
that is the spiritual practice is, first to practice, it is impossible that you can only have sukha. You know why? If you have continuous sukha, will you know what sukha is?
No, it's not possible. You won't know it.
And you want sukha, isn't it? What is the condition you have to fulfill? What is the price you have to pay? Dukkha. That is why, you know, engagement ring, wedding ring, and suffering. It is a necessary part. Yeah. Do you follow the, what is the idea now? We equated ananda with ananta. Now we go further. The further step is, actually ananda is a very limited concept. There is no ananda in the concept of ananda. Only when it is converted into ananta, the real joy will come. Now, the Vedanta divides our experience of so-called happiness into two categories. That which has its opposite and that which doesn't have its opposite. That which has its opposite is what called sukha and dukkha. Day and night, life and death. What is it that doesn't have the opposite? That is called ananda. This world, what is the name for the world? Limitedness. By the very word limitedness means, it has got two sides. Otherwise, you call it unlimited. You know, life continuously goes on. Will you know that you are alive? When will you know that you are alive? Yeah. These things we do not think. That is why God, out of His infinite mercy, has created the opposite. This is how struggle will start. So, what is the point? Let us conclude the first part. He says, if you go on resolving the particular into the general, and that general into its general, and that general into, ultimately you will reach a point where only one thing remains. What is that?
Brahman.
Existence. Call it Brahman, call it God, whatever name you give. So, the question is, does God exist? This is the problem. People, foolish people, go on asking, does God exist? I mentioned that if you substitute the word God with certain other words, then this question itself will dissolve. Does existence exist? Instead of does God exist, does existence exist? It's self-contradictory, isn't it?
Exactly.
I am existing. Otherwise, how can I ask the question about existence? Therefore, nobody can deny existence. In other words, if you really ask this question, does God exist? It is like saying, does God question Himself and say, do I exist? Do you think He will ask?
No.
Yes. We are asking.
Yes, through
us. We are asking. And that is why we have to be practical. This is not simply a theoretical class. What is the practical thing? If we really believe that everything exists, there is a problem. The problem is, you see, nobody wants an enemy. Nobody wants an unhappy experience, isn't it? If every existence is eternal, enemy is also eternal. Unhappiness is also eternal. But we don't want. So what is the way? Convert unhappiness into happiness. Convert the enemy into
friend.
Even friends can be very troublesome. It is friends only who become the enemies. Have you noticed? Enemies never become enemies. Unknown people never become enemies. It is the friends who become, you know. They were behaving nicely, now suddenly they turn. You don't hate somebody who is in India, whom you don't know. This is a fact of life. So that is why the Upanishad, if we say that God is existence, existence is eternal, and existence is Sat, existence is Chit, existence is Ananda, if we really say, claim, profess that we believe in it, then there is only, you cannot have any enemy, you can't have anything, otherwise eternal unhappiness. Is there something called eternal unhappiness? It cannot be. We never want. Even temporary unhappiness we don't want. Not to speak of eternal unhappiness. So what is the truth? Existence is nothing but ananda. Why? Because existence is ananta. What is ananta? Infinite. How many infinites?
Only one.
Advaita. So if you are the only person, who is your enemy? What causes your, you don't have death, you don't have any unhappy. So happiness, unhappiness, life and death, these are experiences, objective experiences. Are you following me? When you go beyond objectivity and become only subject, the question also doesn't arise whether I am going to experience unhappiness, etc. That is why that upasana is a preparation. The disciple, Svetaketu, immediately understands. Finish. This is the first part. So what is it? Eka vijnanena sarva vijnanam bhavati. What is sarva vijnana here? Let us clarify, otherwise you will be in trouble. Sarva vijnanam means I know, I have the knowledge of harmonium, I have knowledge of chair, I have knowledge of enemy. That is not sarva vijnana. Here sarva vijnana means?
Of the cause.
Everything is one. And that one is me. That's why the example is given. If you know gold, you have knowledge of all the ornaments that are made. If you know clay, then you have understood all the knowledge of the pot, small, big, infinite, it doesn't really matter. You understand that?
Yes,
that is called sarva vijnana. Sarva, otherwise you get the understanding. Sarva vijnana means knowledge of all the objects in this world. One person asked in Houston, because same subject. So, does a sarvavit, does he know the secret of hydrogen bomb? This is the question. And this question was raised by Swami Sharadananda in the great master also. Can Sri Ramakrishna, does he know how to text? Does he know how to operate a smartphone? You give him a smartphone, a present, birthday present. You know, birthday present? Yeah. Problem with Sri Ramakrishna's birthday. He asked, when is his birthday? When is his birthday?
He doesn't have one.
All? Every second is his birthday. How many smartphones you are going to supply to him? Yeah. So, what is the point here? Does he know how to operate? Do you think that if you present a computer to him, does he know how to put it on and then do what? So, how can he be called sarvavit? All-knowing? The answer is, he doesn't need to know. He knows the root cause of this everything. Why do you want a laptop? It is to know some knowledge, you know. Where is the doctor? And what is heart attack? How to prevent heart attack? He has no heart. So he is not worried about heart attack at all. Why does he need a laptop? He doesn't have a body. So there is no body problem. He doesn't have a mind, so he has no mind problem. Then whose problem is that? Swami Sharadananda gives this reply. If he wants to know, it will take only very short time, because he has trained his mind. He can know anything. He is intelligent. But he doesn't want to know, that's a different issue. So in that sense, he is sarvavit. But from the other point of view, sarvavit means, this is just like Sri Ramakrishna told, you know, to Keshav Chandra Sen, that when you meet the Queen Victoria next time, you tell her that I know her boss very well. Who is Queen Victoria's boss?
Kapil. No one.
God. No, no, he is right, Thakur. I know myself very well.
Yes.
No, he is Queen Victoria, or President of United States. Obama's. I know Obama's boss very well. Because who has given birth to Obama? Thakur. So that is the real meaning. Sarvavit means he knows the Moola Karana. But if he wants to know the details, that also he can know. This was the teaching given by Aruni to Svetaketu in the first part. So the second part, very simple. The whole Jagat, which is called the Karya effect, has come. Sat has become divided into three. So the teaching goes, it willed, may I become many. I am one, may I become many. Then what did it become? Agnihi Tejaha. That's why we call it, you know, Tejo Barnam.
Tejo?
Barnam.
Tejo, Appa, and
Anna. That is to say fire, water,
and earth.
All the things in the cosmos, there is a combination of these things. Everything, body, mind, living, non-living, everything. So in a sense, this is not pure existence. This is manifestation of existence. So why the scripture goes to such detailed lengths to describe the, what you call, the world? Because the world is none other than Brahman. None other than what we call God. But we do not see God. What do we see? Anything other than God. So to connect to this one, the whole universe has come out of first. Everything has come out of earth. Second, earth itself has come out of water. And the water has come out of
Agni.
The Agni has come out of
Brahman.
Therefore, if you go on tracing, this is how we trace the from the particular to the general. Then we reach Brahman. Same process, the other one. Atmanaha akasha sambhutaha akasha advayu vayu ragni agne rapa advya prithvi. Yes?
Maharaj, what about, you said in Sanskrit maybe, what about air and ether, akash?
Yes, they are implied in this particular Chandogya Upanishad chapter. Those two have been excluded. But they mean that this is better because there you have to go climb 5 steps. Here you only need to climb 3 steps and you are in Brahma. Shortcut. So, all the things, all the physical things, can be merged into Prithivi.
Yes.
And the Prithivi itself can be merged into
water.
Now you see, the Prithivi is gross. Gross is merged into
subtle.
Water is subtle, much more what is called flexible. And water is merged into Agni, which is much more subtle. These are visible things. And if you go further, then Teja, from where did it come? Fire, where from fire has come? So the next step is, here in this particular one, it is Brahman, Atman or Brahman. So why was he describing this whole process of creation? It is for this purpose. Everything is, you see, for a simple example, from scientific point of view, everything is what is called lumped into matter. Everything is matter. Now you notice, if you accept the idea of matter, both living as well as non-living, it is all the mother of everything is. That is why matter means mother. Yeah, it is the mother from which everything else has come. Yeah, if you go a little bit further, energy. What is energy here?
Water.
No. Here energy will be Agni.
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 Agni. I mean, I am comparing that. The scientists would not say that way. But from our point of view, it is energy. Energy is subtler. Matter is manifestation of this energy. Then you ask the question, what is the root cause of energy? Only one. What is that?
Consciousness.
First thing is existence. Matter exists. Existence can come only out of existence. Therefore, matter must have come from a subtle form of existence, which is energy. And there must be somebody to recognize energy is existence. But it is still, from our point of view, it is subtle. From higher point of view, it is gross. So, from which point of view is it gross? From the viewpoint of consciousness, it is gross. Why is it called gross? Because when whatever the subject experiences, it is an object, it is gross. So energy is subtle from our point of view, but it is very gross from a higher point of view. What is that higher?
Consciousness.
You cannot ask, consciousness, what is the cause of consciousness? Where from did it spring? From consciousness. Consciousness has sprung from?
Consciousness.
And that consciousness has sprung from? So there is no point in going beyond, because that is the nature of consciousness.
Yes. Consciousness ever sprung from or spring from anything?
From?
Consciousness has sprung from consciousness. That could not be possible.
No. What I am saying is, this, even if you take that type of argument, this is a wrong argument. That is what I mean. I am not saying that consciousness, otherwise you have to say in other words, what is the root cause of God? From where did he spring? Who were his parents? Who were his tata? Muslim ma euro.
That defies the definition of God.
God means he is the cause of all the adi karana, mula karana, whatever you call, causeless cause.
Yes.
You have to come. Otherwise, logically, you land into a mistake called infinite regress.
Yes.
That means unending.
Yes.
You are never going to get an answer. We have to accept there must be some causeless cause, from which is the cause of everything that came.
Yes.
So, for that purpose, so you can also analyze it that way. Let us analyze it this way, from a spiritual point of view. So, all of us are devotees. We assume that we have gurus. So, from where did we come? No? We said initiation is second birth. Sannyasa is third birth. Whatever birth, in every birth, we must have parents. So, from initiates, who are our father and mother? So, as an example, it could be anybody. Thakur and Ma. Were they divine or not divine?
Absolutely.
If they are divine, who are we?
Divine.
This is the logic. So, this is the nature, and this is most important point in Vedanta. Only a thing can give birth to something which is its nature. A cow can give birth to a cow. A dog can give birth to a dog. This was the argument used by Swami Vivekananda, the Parliament of Religions. Man is not a born sinner. So, born sinner means what? He is born of a sin. Parents are sinful people because his parents are sinners. Their parents are sinners. That means what? Their nature is?
Sinful.
Sinful nature. If my parents are of sinful nature, what would I be?
Sinful.
If I am sinful, the law, even God cannot make me divine.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Because he has to change my nature. And he cannot change.
Right.
So that's why he said, Swamiji's argument goes two ways. If you are sinful, you will forever remain sinful. But what are you teaching? Now you are sinful and you take refuge in Jesus Christ. He will make you sinless. That's the meaning. He will remove your sin. And when he removes your sin, what do you become? Sinless. Sinless means equivalent to divinity. So can God make a sinful person into a sinless person? He can make only on one condition. That is not the nature of the person. It is a covering, some dirt. So he can wash. And then he will become like that. Do you see the logic?
He can do it.
Huh?
That means he can do it.
You didn't catch the point. You see, if your son has some dirt here, you can wash it. But if he is born with that, we call it birthmark. So any amount of soap is not going to remove the birthmark. Do you get the point? If it is something that came from outside, it will also go. You see, some kala has brought some dirt.
Yeah.
So even if you don't wash, kala itself will wash it off.
Yeah.
This is one side of the argument. The other side of the argument is, if man is not really sinful, that means there is only one option. He is?
Divine.
If he is divine, then why do you call him sinful? The only reason is, he had developed certain wrong habits. All that you need to do is remove those wrong habits, and when there is no habits, he will be as pure as gold. This is the argument, which they didn't like. Why did they not like?
The power of the church of God.
Because if you are, two problems are there. If you are divine, I am also divine. What is the difference between you and me? Tum bhi military hai, hum bhi military hai. What is the problem? Why should I revere you? Second is, if I can somehow make that you are sinful. If you are sinful, what am I?
Not sinful.
I am not sinful.
Power.
That means I have the power to do something to you. So in return, you will obey me, you will pay tax, you will contribute to my happiness, etc., etc., etc. So this power mongering, every priest, not only Christians, Hindu priests, they will stand. Do you understand? Here is God, here is you. In between, who is standing? The priest is standing. Why, you know? When you give something to God, he will take half. Give to half. When God gives something to you, he will take half and give you the other half. So both ways he is gaining. What is the point here? He dealt a terrible blow. The point is, they are not conscious what they are doing. They were taught like that. So this doctrine was going on since the St. Augustine, the doctrine was going on. So what is Vedanta's contribution? So we are all divine. How can you say we are divine? We are like this, limited. Yes, what limits is not you. What limits you is the instrument which you are using. Your body is the limit. You are not the limit. Your mind is your limit. How do we know? Simple example Swamiji gives. Here is a baby, here is another baby. Both babies look alike. But at the end you see, after 50 years, one may be President of the United States, another may be a saint. So how did this one baby become a saint? How did one person become Einstein? How did one baby become a worst sinner, Hitler or whatever it is? What is the difference? The actions, karma. Karma. So if you teach a child, all the children, that's why each soul is potentially
divine.
Divine.
If they can be made, given the right training, then all of them would unmanifest. So this manifestation of divinity is a point also we have to understand. We understand manifestation of divinity only spirituality. A person is moral, a person is... No. According to Swami Vivekananda, manifestation of divinity can take any number of channels. One can be a musician, one can be a scientist, one can be a singer, one can be a pickpocket. You know, there also, pickpockets also. Three types of pickpockets. Sattvika pickpocket, Rajasika pickpocket, and Tamasika pickpocket. What is that Sattvika pickpocket? You will be blissfully aware that something happened to you. Yeah. What is the Rajasika pickpocket? You will be painfully aware that something happened to you. What is Tamasika pickpocket? That you catch him and give him good blow. Do you see? Everything is three gunas. So this is where the tie-up comes. In the person in whom the divinity is manifest. Again, we have to remind ourselves. What is the divinity here? Divinity doesn't mean only spirituality. The alertness, the intelligence. So there are intelligent pickpockets. And there are also non-intelligent pickpockets. Intelligent devotees. Intelligent disciples. Three types of disciples. Swami Turiyananda tells. Do you know what is three types of? You see, intelligent disciple is one. Before the guru tells him, he will think what the guru wants, what is comfortable, etc. This is sattvika disciple. And after the guru tells you do this, then the second type of disciple, he will do that. Even after being repeatedly told you do this, the fellow will not do. That is the Tamasika disciple. If a Sadguru is a Sadguru who has Sattvika disciples, otherwise he will become a sad guru. Okay, what is the point we are discussing here? Manifestation of divinity means it could be any field. A person may become a very good boxer, a long time, long jump, long distance runner, high jumper. These are all specialties, you know. An Olympic person who wins tennis or whatever, it's a very special talent. But do you think it will come just that I decided to become a tennis player?
Many
words. He has to do sadhana for that. So, what is the point here? If one person can manifest his divinity in any form, then when all that he needs to do next is change the direction. And he will succeed. That's why Swami Yatishwanda used to say, scientists are much nearer to God than even most of the so-called devotees. Why? Scientists have got three qualities. They have a definite goal. They have full concentration. And they have self-discipline. If any person has these three, then he will succeed sooner or later in anything that he takes up, undertakes. Okay? So, the first argument is reduce everything to sat. And sat cannot be destroyed. Existence cannot be destroyed. This is sufficient for one type of disciple. Then he will merge himself in the sat. But there are people who need different type of argument to understand the same truth. Okay, so what are you? I am like this. And from where did you come? From my parents. And your parents came from whom? Ultimately, you go to that place which is one karana. The other way of analysis is, What are you made up of? What is your body made up of? And these five elements came from where?
Five subtle elements.
And these five subtle elements came from where? From Ahankara. From the Ahankara came from where? From Mahat. Mahat came from where? From Prakriti. And Prakriti came from where? From Purusha. This is another way of analysis. Beautiful analysis. This is what in the second part he says. The third part, we are going to enter now, the third part where this the father wants to make sure he understood. So there are some people who achieve the goal through the second part of the argument. From the jagat, karya to karana. With all this, you know, from Atman came Tejas, from Tejas came the water, from water came the earth, and from the everything is a manifestation of the earth. So take it back. This analysis helps somebody. So the third part is for another type of student who is even now not convinced. So in this part, it's a beautiful part. We will come to that. Before that, I have to tell you something very important. A very important principle of Vedanta is that one instrument which proves one particular type of knowledge is not an authority in other type of knowledge. Let us start with the eye sees a form. Here is a red color. Now the ears, no, I don't agree with you. I don't see any red color. It is not an authority. Why? Because that is not its field. The eye cannot contradict the sounds. I don't hear anything. What is the proof that you are hearing something? So you see, even the five sense organs, they are totally opposite to each other. Each one is an authority in its own field. Now, all these five sense organs carry that information to the mind, which knows how to organize, harmonize everything, and then it gets the picture. It looks like that, it sounds like this, it smells like this, etc. What is the point here? The point is that a scientist cannot say God doesn't exist, spirituality doesn't exist. This is stupid of any scientist, like, you know, Richard Dawkins saying God delusion and all that. God delusion is the greatest delusion Richard Dawkins is suffering from. Why? He doesn't understand the scientific principle. Science cannot prove anything other than certain things. Can science prove what is beautiful? Can science prove what is tasty? Can science prove who is a good person? You take a person, take his DNA, whether he is a good person or bad person. Do you think the science can decide? And this is another, let us dwell upon it for a moment. Here is a person, and we judge two ways. First thing that we judge is, here is a beautiful person or ugly person, okay? Is there somebody called beautiful person and ugly person?
No.
Is there a universal standard by which you can find out this is universally? Yeah, you know, don't mind my saying it, this Miss Universes, you know. I would rather prefer the universe misses it. You know, they promote. Somebody is promoted. It's all political. The best sellers. You know, so many of these so-called New York best sellers, they are all promoted. Some, you see, universally acclaimed. What is called critic, highly paid critic. He is highly paid. to promote it. If you don't pay, he will demote it. If you pay, he will praise it highly. This abstract, you know, psychological thriller. And the fellow who reads it, he doesn't know what is literature. He doesn't know what is psychology. He goes by the critics. Oh, I read that book immediately. It becomes a bestseller. We are so poor in our this thing. What is the point? We raise it. One pramana cannot prove or disprove anything that other pramanas give the knowledge of. Is that point clear?
Yes.
So scientists or non-spiritual people have no authority either to say God exists or God doesn't exist. They can neither validate nor invalidate. All that they can say is we shut ourselves and only we stick to what we know to be the proof. So spirituality also cannot validate or invalidate what is scientific truth. That is also a fact.
Yes.
So the church, you know, it tried to suppress, you know, your Bruno, your Galileo, etc. So that is totally wrong. Religion has nothing to do with it. But since it has power, it misused its power. Now it apologizes. After burning them, I am sorry, I should not have done that after so many years. What good will it do to him? So what is the point we raised? Let us not forget. Either prove or disprove, either validate or invalidate the knowledge gained by other pramanas.
Right.
So a spiritual experience can be validated only by a spiritual pramana. Now, whether God exists, whether we are divine, this knowledge is a spiritual knowledge. So which is the pramana which gives this knowledge? Only scripture. That is why Swami Vivekananda's brilliant analysis of what is scripture, only when it talks about knowledge of God, can it really, is it really doing its job? But if the scripture says the sun rises in the west, you know, foolish people.
Yeah.
I will narrate an incident, you know. Bacon, Francis Bacon. He was supposed to be the father of science in 13th century or something like that. So there was a controversy once among the scholars. It was this controversy. How many teeth a horse has? An adult horse. How many teeth it has? So, 1 minute. Everybody, all the scientists, it is some number, 8 or 16 like that, they were telling. Francis Bacon, he said, it has got 32 teeth. Something like that. The number is not important. He said. They all said, no, our scriptures tell it a horse has got only so many number of teeth. Francis Bacon was a rational-minded person. He said, why waste our time? Let us bring one horse, open its mouth and count the teeth. No, they would not allow it. Or Aristotle told and somebody else told, that must be correct, accept it. What is the point here? Science has absolutely nothing to do with anything to do with our physical world. Psychology? No. Physical science? No. It is authority only with regard to spiritual things. So how do we know? Is the scriptures also, is the first point. One pramana, the knowledge of one pramana cannot be denied or accepted by another pramana. It has no right. Only that particular pramana, pramana means the instrument of knowledge, is valid only in its field. It alone can't. So if you want to prove, you take that pramana and see whether it is proved or not. So scripture in general is what we call, it can tell only about spiritual matters. That means only three things. What are those three things? Whether God exists, whether there is life after death, whether there is other world where we have other type of lives, Svargaloka, etc., for example. That's all, three. Okay. Now, in the scriptures, you get so many confusing statements. One scripture is telling like this, another scripture is telling like that, we get confused. Now, how do we know what is it exactly, what is it that the scripture is telling? So, for that, our logicians have found out, we call it Shadlinga, six characteristics. So, what are those six characteristics? Upakrama and Upasamhara. A scripture begins like this, and it also repeats the same. God exists, it begins, and gives some arguments, it ends with God exists. Upakrama, Upasamhara. Then Abhyasa. Abhyasa means, again and again, it tells God exists. After some time, God exists. And it goes and you go and have a cup of tea, as God exists. Abhyasa means many, many, many times it should tell this thing. Then, Apurvata. Apurvata means, suppose some other scripture had already told you. So you already have read about it. It is not giving any new knowledge. You don't need it. You already have got that knowledge. You don't need it. Apurvata means something unique. Then, Upapatti. Upapatti means reasoning. Simply, the scripture doesn't want to cram it down your throat. It will give cogent reason. We already came across. From? Everything came from Sat. The cause and effect is purely rational. Also, is this world is an effect. Therefore, if wherever there is an effect, there must be a cause. And the effect cannot be different from the cause. Therefore, if you trace yourself to the cause, then two things will happen. You know what your nature is, and you know also that your nature is not different from anything nature. That means you are only one. So, this is called Upapatti. Then, praise, Arthavada. Praise, you know, Arthavada means, you know, if you study, if you every day just read half a shloka of Bhagavad Gita, you will get punya of donating so many cows. Yeah. That means, why is it telling? That means, it is encouraging you. It is like advertisement, frequently advertisement. We are here to make money for you. Every bank is advertising. We are here to make money for you. You feel like, you know, or buy this car, or eat this product. This cereal is good for your health. Like that. You know, we are all creatures of whatever we hear many times. You know that beautiful story? Madalasa is a wonderful story. Panchatantra. I told you that story. You know, one Brahmin, he wanted some milk. So he has to get milk. He cannot buy a cow. So he wanted to buy one goat. So he went to the next village and he didn't have sufficient money to buy one milch goat. He bought one kid. It is going to grow up and then start giving the milk. Now some fellows had taken into their heads to have goat's meat. So they saw this foolish Brahmin, three fellows. So between, this fellow went to another village to buy that kid. He bought it. He was carrying it on his neck. So these fellows stationed themselves at three places. So first, you know, casually, chuttukalchukuntu, you know, he rolled tobacco. One fellow came and he saw, oh my God, you are carrying a black dog. And this Brahmin got angry and said, are you blind? This is a kid, goat's young one, young goat. He said, do you know the difference between goat and dog? All right, if you think it is a dog, it is fine with me. You take it. Already the doubt was sown. So after 1 mile or so, another fellow stepped and jumped back. You are a Brahmin, you are going to that village. The moment they see you, they will outcast you. You are carrying a dog. That fellow has no connection with the first fellow. The second fellow is telling now, it is a dog. But he has still a benefit of doubt. No, it cannot be. So he goes. Just before he entered his own village, the third fellow steps up. Oh my God! Where did you get this small black dog? This now by this time, 100% thoroughly convinced. 3 persons, total strangers. 3 persons cannot be telling this lie. Simply he threw it there before anybody could see him. And that day this fellow, Joy Ram, Joy Ma Kali. What is the point? If we hear something again and again, we start believing it. That's why so many people have become so-called atheists nowadays. Why? Go on hearing from God and all this nonsense. And it is science now proved conclusively there is no God. If you don't believe my words, then I have got a copy of Richard Dawkins' God Delusion. I will lend it to you. All these atheistic ideas, if they hear, then the person's life will become a hell. A living example, Mahapurush Maharaj, who had so many visions, he started reading somebody's book, God Doesn't Exist. And suddenly he said, all these years of ideas about God vanished like thin cloud. Power of these books. And then he was going to Sri Ramakrishna. And then he told also Sri Ramakrishna, I lost all my faith in God. Sri Ramakrishna said, good, good. This is also a stage in spiritual development. I also had gone through this. You will also overcome it. Soon again he came back. What is the point?
Repetition,
abhyasa. What is japa? The more you do japa, the more you are convincing yourself God exists. Yes. Until you are convinced 100%, you have to do japa. And once you are convinced 100%, you don't need to do any japa. You know why? Because you are constantly, you will remember constantly that you are God. That is the purpose of japa. So, this abhyasa, ardhapati, then last, kriya, phala means what do I get? If I go on reading this Upanishad, what do I get? We are all utilitarians, what is the result? What do I get by doing japa? What do I get studying the scriptures? Then he says, you will become Brahman, Brahmavit, Brahmaiva. Bhavati, tattvamasi shvetaketo. You will come to know that you are Brahman. Once you know you are Brahman, you have no fear of death, you have no fear of losing consciousness, you have no fear of ever suffering. You will be sat, chit, and ananta ananda. This is the result. These are the shadlinga, we call it, 6 characteristics. That is what beautifully, see, everywhere you get some of these characteristics. But in the 6th chapter, all the 6 characteristics. So we will have to go through this, and 8, 9 times he repeats, and then 6, 8 examples he will give. With that we will conclude. It will take little time, but it doesn't matter. Okay. The 6 marks. Upakrama, upasamhara, commencement and conclusion. Abhyasa, practices or reiteration. Apurvata, apurvata means unprecedentedness, uniqueness. Phala, fruit. Arthavada, glorifying the passage. And upapatti means illustration through reasoning. So the Shruti means here, the sixth chapter of this, begins, in the beginning there was Brahman, one only without second, and concludes, all this has its being in it, that is the true, and it is the Atman, and thou art that, Tat Satyam Atma Tattvam Asi Shveta Ketu, that Tattvam Asi Mahavakya occurs here, nine times. That is why it is the greatness of the sixth chapter. So, this is enough for us. So, the phala or fruit is moksha, or the final emancipation through the knowledge of Brahma. Utpatti consists of illustrations, drishtantas, similes and reasonings, analogies, such as that of the clay and the pot, the thread and the cloth, the gold and the ornaments, the ocean and the waves, etc. We have to conclude by these marks that Brahman is the main theme of the scriptures. One goes beyond grief and evil by attaining the knowledge of Brahman, just as one goes beyond fear and trouble by knowledge. This is not a serpent, but this is only a rope. That is the knowledge. That means what? You are not a jiva, but you are Brahma. That is what is really intended here. Okay. Now, third part of this sixth chapter. So, he starts here. Saya esho anima etat atmyam idam sarvam tat satyam sa atma tattvamasi shvetaketu iti bhuya iti. Bhuya eva ma bhagavan vignapayitu iti tatha somyeti hovacha. So what it means, that being which is this subtle essence, even that all this world has for itself, that is the true, that is the Atman, that the word, O Shvetaketu. Now let us, a little bit explanation. That being which is this subtle essence. What did we discuss, all the three classes? Subtle essence. What is the subtle essence of? Mulakarana. What is the Mulakarana?
Brahma.
Sat. Is the word, precise word there given is Sat. Sat. He's not saying Brahman or anything. We are saying that. Another name for Sat is Brahman. So, that is the subtle essence. Even that, all this world has for itself. In other words, this world is nothing but the same truth, with Nama Rupa. That means the world is nothing but Brahman. That one only. Nothing, no difference. Because if this is the cause, this is the effect, it cannot be anything else. That is the one. That is the Atman. That the word, O Shvetaketu, and that is the true. This is the only true. Everything else is, if that is the truth, that means what? This is not true. That means the idea we cherish now, that I am limited, I am not the divine. Limited means what? I am not the
divine.
I am not God.
Yeah.
This is not true.
Right.
You are God.
Yes.
That is true. But not your body. This you should never take. Am I God? This is the mistake we commit. Yes, you are God. So I cannot jump. No, you cannot jump. You can jump. Your body cannot jump. But I don't understand. Yes, you understand. But your mind cannot understand. So we are mistaking ourselves with the instrument. Get rid of the instrument. Then when the instrument is not there, what are you? You are Sat, you are Chit, and you are knowledge. So, I will give you a small illustration for this, you know. We are all looking into a mirror to know who we are. Supposing there are three types of mirrors. In museums, you see three types of mirrors.
Concave, convex,
and normal. You stand in front of a concave mirror. How do you appear? Even fat fellows appear as
thin.
Short fellows appear as
tall.
So, the other way, the tall fellows appear as thin but very fat. It's the easiest way of either becoming fat or becoming thin. But, but you know, everything has its opposite effect. You may appear to be thin, but you appear as though you are 8 feet tall, which is not desirable. So, half convex lens. What is the point here? You stand in front of the normal mirror. It will reflect what you are. So, we are looking at ourselves either as good or as bad, or as with life or without life, as with happy or not happy. These are all mirrors. What is the mirror here? Mind is the only mirror. Your happiness, unhappiness, everything depends upon your mind only. So, if mind is expansive, then to that extent you will also find yourself. So, when you are told through upasana you expand yourself, what is it that expands? Do you expand? Or your mind expands? It's the mind which expands. And you are identified with the mind. Therefore, you say, I am also expanding. Get rid of the mind. Then you will know who you are. That is the only truth. So, it starts like this. This is the first statement. First of the 9 repetitions. Why repetition? Because Svetaketu didn't understand. He says, so, Bhagavan, Ma, Bhagavan, Vignapayatu. I want further teaching. What does it mean?
I did not understand.
It means, I understood a little, but I need further clarification. That's what it says. Tatha Saumya Iti. Okay, my dear child, I will do that. Now he gives certain examples. I will just briefly read it and we will go through it. He gives the example of rivers first. These rivers, eastern rivers, flow along to the east and the western ones to the west. They rise from the ocean and merge in the ocean and become that ocean. And there, as these rivers do not know themselves as, I am the eastern river, I am the western river, even so, dear boy, all these creatures, having come from being, do not know we have come from being. And whatever these creatures were here, tiger or lion or wolf or worm or fly or gadfly or mosquito, that they become again. What is this illustration for? When all a mosquito goes into deep sleep, a man goes into deep sleep, a tiger goes into deep sleep, the tiger doesn't know that I am a tiger in that state, the man doesn't know that I am a man in that state, the mosquito doesn't know I am a mosquito in that state. But as soon as they come out,
same
thing will happen. The deeper symbolism of this, all of us have come from the same state. That's why it is called karana sharira, causal body. Causal body means all bodies come only from that cause. What is the point? When we attain to that causal state, which is another name for deep sleep, but that's not a correct understanding. When we get really to the cause, then all of us are in that being. I am. Nothing else. I am. There a mosquito is not a mosquito, a tiger is not a tiger, man is not man. Okay? Do you understand?
Yes.
Only when we enter into the dualistic state, then I am this, I am that, differentiations will come. What is the idea here? So also, my dear, the whole jagat, when it comes out, then I am this, I am that, you are that. But when we merge ourselves in Brahman, then what does everything say? I am Brahman. Tattvamasi Shvetaketu. That Brahman, the where there is no differentiation. That is. What is the second point? Just as rivers, where from they come?
Ocean.
And where do they go back again?
Ocean.
By this, two facts are illustrated, which we discussed. What are those two facts? First is that whatever direction a river is flowing, it has come only from ocean. So when all the rivers are in the ocean, in an unmanifested state, do they know I am Ganga, I am Yamuna? they do not. That is the first point. Second point is, the nature of every river is exactly the same. The differentiation is only when it manifests. In the unmanifested state, there is only one. In the manifested states, the difference will come. So, this whole, what is this jagat, this world, is a manifested state of Brahman. What is the unmanifested state of this world? Brahman. Tattvamasi Shvetaketu. Again, revered sir, please teach me again. So, he gives the example of the vriksha. Of this large tree, dear boy, if anyone were to strike it at the root, it would exude sap, though still living. If anyone were to strike in the middle, it would exude sap, though still living. If anyone were to strike at the top, it would exude sap, though still living. As the tree is pervaded by the living self, it stands firm, drinking constantly and rejoicing. That, what is the example for? Like a vriksha. So long as it is living, then you cut some branches, cut this, cut that, it is still living only. Like that a man may undergo any number of changes. Now Jagradavastha, now Swapnavastha, now Sushuptiavastha, now Maranavastha, now Murchavastha. It doesn't matter. You are Sat, you remain Sat, even though that particular state is changing. Tattvamasi Shvetaketo. That is the thing. And then he also says, if the life leaves one branch of this tree, then that branch dries up. If it leaves the second one, then that also. If it leaves the whole tree dries up. That is to say, if the manifestation is cut off, then what happens to that? The tree dies. What does it mean, the tree dies? Just it has gone into its unmanifest state. So the tree is something which we can experience. That our experience, it has gone out of our experience. But it continues in the other form. So you are that. So like that he said, that even so being left by the living self, this body surely dies, like a leaf pluck.
Yeah.
So, what is this body? Like a leaf. But the tree goes on living.
Yeah.
What does it matter? You think that, oh, I am fallen, I am dead. You are not the leaf. So, you are the tree. Udvamo lamadashakam ashvattham prahuravyayam, like that. So, that is the illustration. Thou art that. Then he says, bring a fruit from the banyan tree. You know banyan tree fruit? It will be like this size. That fruit contains hundreds of seeds. This like this, tiny. So he says, bring one seed and cut it into half. And you take that part which is cut, cut it into half. That means, now what do you see? I see nothing. What is this illustration for? The knowledge of Atman is ativa sukshmam, because you see, this small seed which you see nothing contains the entire future tree. Like that, this knowledge is there within you. It is a bit of it is manifesting as this life. Next life something else may manifest. But when do you manifest your full glory? Only when you know who you really are. The point of this is, the knowledge of Brahman is ativa sukshmam, extremely subtle. You need to be taught again and again and again by a competent teacher.